Welcome to the Old Time Dragnet Show. This is your host, Adam Graham, coming to you as always from Boise, Idaho. If you'd like to email me about the program, email adam@adamsweb.us. Visit our blog, www.orble.com/dragnet-radio-show. And please go to Podcast Alley, cast your vote for us. I do want to thank everybody who's voted for us this month. We are in the top, as of right now, top 200 on Podcast Alley. We definitely appreciate your votes. I'd like to push that a little bit higher. So please cast your votes. We've got some great comments as well as an email we're going to share later on after the program. We'll go ahead and get right into today's episode, which is an interesting one. It's called The Big Book, and this relates to something. This is not the type of episode you're going to hear anywhere else. Part of it is because police really don't engage in enforcing these type of laws, in terms of laws against pornography sale and distribution, unless we're talking about child pornography. You're not going to see this type of effort on adult pornography. Now, selling it to kids, depending on the age, you might, but this is very much they're working in juvenile division, but this is pretty much a vice case, and it's definitely interesting to see how they go ahead and deal with this and solve this case, and it's a tough one to crack with a very interesting solution, and we'll find out more about that once we get to the end. But let's go ahead and we will get started with The Big Book here on the Old Time Dragnet Show.
The story you are about to hear is true. Only the names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Fatima Cigarettes, best of all long cigarettes, brings you Dragnet.
You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned the Juvenile Bureau. The high schools in your city have been flooded with obscene literature. You stamp out one source and a dozen more spring up. Your job, stop them.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Monday, October 21st. It was cool in Los Angeles. We were working a day watch out of Juvenile Bureau. My partner's Ben Romero. The boss is Inspector Lester, commander of the Juvenile Bureau. My name's Friday. It was 10 a.m. when we got to the auditorium of Canfield High School. Stage door.
Guess we go right out onto the stage.
Yeah, we better wait till we're called, though, huh?
You're the man from the police department?
Yes, sir. This is Sergeant Romero. My name's Friday.
How do you do?
How do you do?
I'm Paul Fisher, the principal here. Come right out onto the stage and we'll get the meeting started.
All right. Yes, sir.
Just have a chair there.
Thank you.
Is the microphone on? Ladies and gentlemen of the Coordinating Council, members of the Parent Teachers Association. As you know, this meeting has been called for the purpose of discussing ways and means to bring about an end to the distribution of the filthy and obscene books and pamphlets that have been littering every high school campus in the city of Los Angeles. We've tried every means at our disposal to clean this matter up, and they all seem to fail. On the advice of the Coordinating Council and Mrs. Randall to the PTA, we have called in the authorities. Here to discuss the matter with us this morning are two officers connected with the Juvenile Bureau of our police department, Sergeant Romero and Sergeant Friday. And now, may I turn the meeting over to Sergeant Friday of the Los Angeles Police Department.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, the only way we're going to get to the bottom of this thing and put a stop to it is to get all the information we can on where this lascivious material is coming from. Now, you people, as parents and teachers of the children who are buying and reading this stuff, might be able to give us some help. So, if it's all right with you, Mr. Fisher, I'd like to hear from some of the people sitting out there, if I may.
Certainly. Go right ahead.
Thank you. Well, if any of you people have anything to say or any information, any questions, why, we'd be glad to listen to you and do our best to answer your question.
Sergeant.
Yes, the lady out there. Go right ahead. Well, ma'am, I think I'd better make it clear now that there's only one way a police officer can arrest anyone for possession of lewd literature. The officer has to prove that the party who possesses this literature does so for the purpose of selling it. Sometimes that's difficult to prove.
Well, I told you I can prove it.
You mean you can go to this place and buy a book from him?
Well, maybe I couldn't. But if I were known...
Yes, ma'am, that's just the point. Now, I don't know offhand about the one in your neighborhood, but I can assure you that we've cracked down on hundreds of such peddlers in the past few months. And you can see for yourselves that this doesn't put a stop to it. We've got to get to the source.
I have a question for you.
Yes, sir?
My name's Fred Scott. I'm director of the Square Shooters Boys Club.
Yes, sir.
Point I'm trying to make is, I know the young boys pretty well. With the exception of my boys, 49 in number, I'll wager just about every boy in this high school has one of those books. Or at least he's seen one.
Yes, sir, we're aware of that.
Point I'm trying to make is, somewhere in the municipal code, there's got to be a law to forbid such things.
Yes, sir, there is such a law.
Then why isn't it enforced?
It is.
What does the law say?
Well, how do you mean, sir?
Well, I mean, what happens when somebody's found guilty of selling these books? What's the penalty?
Oh, well, the law states that an offender is liable to fines, a jail term of 6 months, or both.
That's not much of a law, is it? Why isn't there a stronger law?
Well, I wouldn't know that, sir.
The point I'm trying to make is, we need laws with some teeth in them.
We have good laws in the state of California for the most part. It's true that we're weak in some cases, but you can say that about most states, I think.
Well, you may be satisfied with the laws, but I'm not. I'd say stronger laws. That's the answer.
No, I don't think it is, Mr. Scott. Passing a set of new laws isn't going to make this city a cleaner or a safer place for your boys to grow up in. Laws don't decide how moral a city's going to be. People do. Laws don't mold character in young boys either. The parents and teachers do that.
I don't think I know what you're getting at. What do you mean?
Well, just this, Mr. Scott. It's our job on the police department to keep filthy junk like these books from falling into youngsters' hands.
Yes?
Now, on the other side of the fence, the youngster has to be taught to recognize this obscene material for what it is, filth and garbage. And the youngsters have to be taught that in the home, in the school, in the church. Now, if they can be made to understand that the kind of dirt and filth these books represent, well, that'd be worth more than any new set of laws, wouldn't it?
But what about these men who put out the books? The men who sell them. How do you reach them?
Through the youngsters. They seem to know the way. The next morning at 8 a.m., after meeting with Inspector Lester of Juvenile Bureau, Ben and I went on stakeout at Canfield High School. From past experience, we knew there was little hope of a quick end to the case. It was going to be a long haul. Tracing the source all the way up the line from the high school kids who bought the filthy books to the small fry pushers, the wholesalers, and finally, we hoped, to the top, the man who printed the books. We had no illusions on that score. Generally, with the arrest of his pushers and other small-timers who work for him, the top man gets the alarm and clears out before the police officer can apprehend him with evidence that will stand up in court. During the first 2 days at Canfield High, Ben and I found out nothing. The obscene literature was being bartered and exchanged between students, but the main source of supply was still a mystery. We had one slim lead to go on. Mr. Fisher, the high school principal, helped run it down.
We've been watching that boy down in the yard since yesterday, Mr. Fisher. Seems to have quite a bit of spending money, expensive clothes, a car of his own.
I don't know that boy's family. That could be well fixed.
Well, we saw him with a stack of those dirty books in his notebook. He must have had a dozen of them. He was showing them around to his crowd.
Travers, are you sure?
Joe, take a look down there.
Yeah. Yeah, Travers is showing him something. I can't see what it is.
Come over to this side of the window.
Yeah.
Small books.
Mm-hmm.
He's giving them to one of the other fellows.
They've got their wallets out. They're giving Travers money.
Come on, Ben. You better come too, Mr. Fisher.
This way out to the yard?
No, to the left. That's it.
Let's hurry, huh?
This door, Sergeant. Right here.
Travis. Travis.
Hello, Mr. Fisher.
They'd like to talk to you.
Yeah?
Well, these men here are from the police department. They want to ask you some questions.
Can we go inside?
Yes, sir. Come on.
Oh, what's the matter, Mr. Fisher? I haven't done anything.
Oh, you see. Come on.
What is it? What's it all about?
Sergeant?
It'll be a lot easier if we have the truth now, son. Did you just sell those boys out there some dirty books?
No, I mean, it's only a gag. They're funny books.
Have you got any more of them on you?
Yes, sir.
Can we see them, please?
I didn't steal them. Only books. Funny books. Here.
Thanks. Almost a dozen.
Mm-hmm. You think these are funny books, do you, Travis?
Well, some of them. I guess not. It's only a gag, Sergeant.
Where'd you get them?
I didn't steal them. I bought them off a guy.
Who?
Why? Well, I can't tell you.
Do you have any more of these books?
No, sir.
Will you show us your locker?
I can't remember the combination. It's a new locker.
Could you open the locker for us, Mr. Fisher?
Yes, but I'll have to get the maintenance man.
All right, I'll show you. Come on. Down here, sir. This one. 412. I've only got a couple.
All right, we'll see.
Come on, open it.
I haven't done anything.
Here's a sample, Joe. Locker's loaded down with them.
Rotten filth.
You can't arrest me. I don't sell the books, only rent them.
Somebody's been briefing you. Who?
You're only making it hard on yourself, boy.
You can't prove anything. These are my books. I don't sell them.
Where do you get them? Who sold them to you?
Nobody. I got them, that's all.
All right. We'll have to talk to your folks.
You can't. They're away. No. No, you can't. Don't.
Afraid we'll have to, son.
Oh, please. Please don't tell them. Please don't let them know. I'll do anything.
All right. Let's have the truth, then. Who are you selling the books for?
Name's Barney. That's all I know. I meet him at a cigar store downtown, 5th and Harrison.
Does he sell you the books?
He gives them to me. I sell them and then give him the money. I get 10 cents for every one I sell.
How much do you sell them for?
25 cents. Some are a dollar. I get 30 cents for those.
And the boys in this school have been paying that kind of money for this, Phil?
Yes, sir.
This man who gives you these books, you know where he lives?
No, sir. I haven't any idea.
When are you going to see him?
Well, this is Wednesday. I was going to meet him downtown this afternoon.
The cigar store?
Yes, sir. But I don't want to get Barney in trouble. He's been okay to me.
Sure. He's done a lot for you. 4 p.m. Wednesday. Ben and I drove downtown with 16-year-old Eddie Travers. We parked the car near the corner of 5th and Harrison and kept an eye on the cigar store. We waited.
No sign yet, Travers?
No, sir. Barney usually waits by the newsstand there. I haven't seen him yet.
How long have you been selling for this man, son?
About 3 months, maybe four.
Any idea where he gets the books?
Well, I... Oh, just a minute, Sergeant.
Hmm? Yeah?
I think... Yeah, that's Barney, the one going up to the cigar counter.
The man in the gray suit there?
Yeah, that's him. He's going into Juanita's cafe.
Is that where you usually go after you meet him?
Yes, sir.
You better take the boy back to the office, Ben. I'll tail this guy and see what I can find out.
Okay, you want me to pick you up later?
No, I'll call you at the office. Oh, you got any matches?
Oh, no, I'm out.
I'll pick some up at the cigar stand.
All right. See you later.
Yeah. Box of matches?
Oh, yeah.
And a pack of spearmint, too.
All right, sir.
What's obliged? Got a special on Old Tip Canoe Bourbon today. $2.69 a fifth.
No, no thanks.
Hey, Rosie. Rosie, another tamale when you get time, huh?
All right, buddy. Don't come in.
Let me have a chicken tacos, a side order of fried beans, and a cup of coffee, huh?
Chicken tacos on one, side of beans. Another tamale. Anything else, Barney?
Yeah, some more coffee, huh, Rosie?
Tamale on one.
Hey.
Hmm?
Slide the ketchup down here, will you?
Yeah, here you go.
Thanks. They got good tacos in there. Lots of meat of them. It's fresh stuff.
Yeah.
There's the sugar.
Oh, thank you.
Hey, Rosie. Here. Here, Rosie.
Yeah?
I got some new ones in just today. Whole stack of them.
What are you talking about?
You know, the picture books. Good ones. You can make some money on the side. They sound good around here.
Listen, Barney, I told you once, no.
Oh, come ahead. Look them over. These are good ones.
I said no, that lousy junk. The next time you bring that stuff in here, I tell the boss, understand? Now eat and get out.
Well, that's a real funny day. Looks great, but boy, what a cold potato.
Yeah?
Come on. Come on, eat and get out and take that junk with you.
Ah, cold potato. I don't like to chow anyway.
Well, coffee's certainly cold.
Yeah. Yeah. You'd probably get a big boot out of you.
Hmm?
Take a look.
Hmm. Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah, it's good quality stuff.
Yeah. Give me that little book there.
Mm, let me show you one.
Mm-hmm.
Wait a minute. Yeah. Wouldn't that kill you?
Man. Yeah. How about sell me one of them?
Okay. 4 bits for the small ones, 1 buck for the big ones. Wait a minute. Let's see, I got 14 of them here. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll make you a deal. You can have the whole works for $10.
Okay. You got any more?
Well, here, you going in business for yourself?
No, I got a newsstand out in Riverside. Books like this ought to go fast. I think I can probably handle another $25 worth.
I'll get the rest of them back at the hotel. Some of them are in color.
Yeah?
You want to meet me there tonight? Around 7?
Where's the hotel?
Well, you go straight up 6th Street from here. It's just 1 block on your left. Call the Denver House. I'm in room 337.
You going up there now?
Well, I supposed to meet some guy, but... Yeah, we can go now. How about a check, was he, huh?
Yeah.
Hey, you're probably wanting more of these. I can put you on my mailing list.
Okay. The prices are right. I don't want to pay retail.
Nah, we can work out a deal. Come on, let's go.
Okay.
Hey, that Rosie, she's really put together.
Yeah.
Too bad. A real cold potato, though.
Some are like that.
Yeah.
No sense of humor. We left Juanita's Cafe and walked up Harrison Street to 6th. We turned left and went down 1 block. It was 5 minutes to 5 when we got to Barney's room in the Denver House, number 337. He dragged out a steamer trunk from under the bed and counted out a stack of books and pamphlets covering the general topic of degenerate filth in stories and photographs.
Okay, Mac, there you are. It's $25 worth. Give me the money and the bucks are all yours.
Okay. Here you go. There's 10, 15... 18. I'll have to give you a check for the rest.
How do I know it's any good? You could take off. I'd never see you again.
You'll see me. You're under arrest.
Huh? You're kidding, eh? Let go.
All right, let's hold it right here.
Hey, wait a minute. Now, look, Lieutenant, we can work this thing out.
We'll work it out downtown.
Now, wait a minute. I can set this thing right for you.
Where are you getting this junk? Who's supplying you?
Look, why not use your head? You never get the top, man. Not in 10 years you won't.
We got lots of time. Come on.
You are listening to Dragnet, the case history of a police investigation presented in the public interest by Fatima Cigarettes.
The filthy literature racket feeds on the curiosity of youngsters and the stupidity and ignorance of adults. It's an all-season business, and in its own quiet way, it has reached a market which the other heavy rackets never hoped to reach, your home and your children. 6 p.m., Wednesday, October 23rd. We checked the records, and the make sheet showed his true name to be Timson, 38 years old. He had a past record of 1 previous conviction for peddling lewd literature in Dodge City, Iowa, in March 1948. We had him brought to the interrogation room.
Sit down, Timson.
Okay.
Well, let's make it easy, Barney. Where are you getting the books?
I told you, Sergeant, they deliver them to me.
Who, the...
Different guys. I don't remember them all. I send different guys every time.
How often do they make the deliveries to you?
Once a month.
When?
Around the first, usually. Sometimes, maybe the second or the third.
They bring the books to your hotel?
Yeah, they leave a pack up in the lobby addressed to me.
They ever use the mails?
They never do. They're not that dumb.
So you've never seen the men that you do business with, huh?
Not so I'd know them, no.
You have no idea where they're operating from?
I don't know.
You expect us to swallow that?
I'm telling you, I don't know.
Oh, don't push us that kind of a story, Barney.
I'm giving it to you straight. Now, what else do you want?
Who's the supply man?
And look, we found this notebook in your hotel room, Barney. There's a list of names in it.
This your customer book?
Friends.
Okay, okay, they're customers.
That gives us enough to land on you.
I know that. I've told you everything.
You still don't know who you're working for?
No.
Look, there's a phone number in this notebook. No name to go with it.
Yeah.
Now look at it. This one right here.
I don't know. Must be another customer. Yeah.
Does it belong to the boss?
I don't know the boss. He don't know me.
Then who do you buy the books from?
Who says I buy them?
He must owe somebody a lot of money.
Don't worry. I don't owe him nothing. He don't owe me nothing.
He does now.
What?
You're going to jail for him. Barney Timpson was booked into Central Jail for violation of the Penal Code, Section 311.3. We contacted the telephone company, and they traced the extra phone number in Timpson's notebook to a private residence on Wonderview Drive in Laurel Canyon. A detail of men was assigned to stake out on the place. During the next week, mainly from information obtained from Barney Timpson's customers, seven other peddlers of obscene books and pamphlets were taken into custody and questioned. Five of the seven told us they picked up their supply of books from the Laurel Canyon address. We moved in on the place and found thousands of lewd books and pamphlets stored in the garage. Three men on the premises were taken into custody. They identified themselves as John Alexander, George Kelleher, and Raymond Kester. We brought them downtown and interrogated them for 2 hours. They refused to admit anything. They were booked in, but by noon their lawyers arrived and they were released on writs of habeas corpus. 2 p.m., Ben and I met with Inspector Lester of Juvenile Bureau.
Just had a call from the men on stakeout at the Laurel Canyon place. They've just been over the garage where the books are stored.
They get anything, Skim?
A couple of things. Might be fair leads.
What's that?
Three stacks of books they found are wrapped in proof letterheads from the Havenbrook Hotel.
Yeah?
We checked with the hotel. They get all their printing down at Rudolph Brothers, placed out in West L.A.
That name's not familiar to me.
It's a big layout. Their specialty is religious books, Bible, things like that.
That doesn't add.
Not so sure.
How do you mean?
Be a perfect cover for the racket. Printing the Bible one day and a flock of filthy books the next. Could be the setup.
What kind of a name does this Rudolph's place have around town? They've been here long?
50 years. Good reputation.
Well, we could give it a look.
Where's the place?
On West 3rd, just below Athens Street.
All right.
Check the place over, but don't make them suspicious. If there's anything wrong, no use tipping until we're ready to move.
Right, Skipper.
We've got to reach the presses turning out this junk and choke off the supply where it starts. Do that and we got a beat.
Right.
Just a minute. Juvenile Bureau, Lester. Yes, Adam. Down where? Okay, they'll be right out. Gross and Bocelli, they spotted one of the delivery cars.
Where?
Downtown. They followed it out to West L.A.
Yeah?
Rudolph's printing shop.
4 p.m., Ben and I, together with two other men from Juvenile Bureau, drove out Beverly Boulevard to Athens Street and then down one block to the corner of West 3rd, where we picked up Gross and Pacelli on stakeout. The Rudolph Brothers Printing Company covered almost half a square block on the corner of West 3rd and Athens. The front of the plant had display windows featuring expensive leather-bound Bibles and other religious literature. While the other men remained on stakeout, Ben and I crossed the street and entered the plant. We introduced ourselves to the clerk in charge as potential wholesale customers, and we asked to be shown around the shop. It was more than obliging.
I'd be happy to show you our plant, gentlemen. The most modern religious publication company in the West. That's our claim. Would you step this way, please?
Thank you.
On your left there, those are three of our new Ludlow machines. Excellent mechanisms, needless to say.
Mm-hmm. You must employ quite a few men in here.
65 full-time. Enough to meet any emergency rest jobs you might want done. Now, over here are Bush Emerson hand presses.
Oh. You handle only religious books, then, nothing else?
That's right, sir. We specialize exclusively in that.
You don't take in any small contracts, school journals, things like that?
No, our steady customers take up all of our time. Here on this stone, you see the pages of a new prayer book we're getting together. Very ultra.
Mm-hmm.
An entirely different kind of typeface.
Oh, is that so?
Yes, and back there, along the wall, are new linotypes. The very latest, monotypes. Then the proof presses. Next to them are proof readers. And the flatbed truss-load press beyond that.
Seems like lots of activity. Business is pretty good, I guess, huh?
Oh, yes, we're kept pretty busy. Quality printing is always in demand.
Yeah. Well, thanks very much for showing us around.
Not at all, gentlemen. Anytime. Here, this way out.
All right.
I'll get you one of my cards here. There you are.
Oh, thank you.
And when you're ready to do business, why, just give me a call. I'd be glad to take care of you.
All right, sir. Thanks. We'll do that.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Goodbye.
All right. What do you think?
You got me. Nothing out of place.
Yeah, whatever system they're using, you got it down pat.
Bibles, prayer books, church announcements, that's all I saw.
Hey, Ben, look.
Hmm?
That man getting out of that car going into Rudolph's there?
Alexander, the guy we picked up this morning on North Canyon.
Yeah.
What's the answer?
I don't know, but it's got to be somewhere in that print shop. We went back to the car and waited. The stakeout on Rudolph's printing plant continued. 6 p.m. The lights in the display windows went out. The shades were drawn. We watched the employees leave. 6:30 p.m. The lights in the plant were still burning. Gross went down to the corner and picked up some hot dogs and coffee for our dinner. We ate in the car. 7:30 p.m. A black Cadillac convertible pulled up across the street. Two men got out and let themselves in through the front door. We waited. Between 7:30 and 8 p.m., we counted 21 men entering the plant.
That printing press is starting up.
Okay, let's move. Oh, yeah. Gross, you and Pacelli want to go through the back, and Ben and I will take the front.
Right, let's go, Mike.
It's a neat setup. I had it all figured.
Yeah, you didn't spot any side entrances, did you?
No. Here we are.
Can you try the door?
Yeah. It's no good.
All right.
Who is it?
Police officers, open up. All right, come on, open up.
The press is stopped.
All right, let's hit it quick. Come on, again.
There we are.
There they are, Joe.
They're trying to smash the plates. Come on.
Pacelli, save those plates.
Watch it, Ben. All right, come on.
All right, you. All right, hold it.
Hold it against the wall. Hey, Gross, get those plates off the press, will you? All right, hold it, you two.
Joe, look out of me.
All right.
Get the plates, Joe.
If I round up those men and keep the doors covered.
Get them back from those tables. Come on over by the wall.
That's about most of them, Joe.
Those two men going out the door. Come on, head them off, will you?
Come on, you. Come on, back inside. Right. Get up, wait. Get your hands off her.
Hold it up, mister. Come on, over there with the rest.
You'll pay for this. I'll sue you down your last nick.
Yeah, come on, simmer down.
Hey, Joe, we got Rudolph going out the back.
Right. Call the office. We're going to need transportation.
Okay.
Take those two with you, huh?
All right, come on.
Well, we got enough evidence against them.
Yeah, we're going to need it.
Two full pages of the junk right here.
Yeah.
Look. Right next to it.
Yeah. Page from the Bible.
The story you have just heard was true. Only the names were changed to protect the innocent.
On January 9th, trial was held in Superior Court, Department 94, City and County of Los Angeles, State of California. In a moment, the results of that trial. Frank Rudolph and 16 of his accomplices were tried and convicted of possessing lewd and lascivious literature for the purpose of sale. They received sentences as prescribed by law and are now serving their terms in the county jail.
Remember this Saturday, because that means Dimension X on NBC.
Welcome back here on the Old Time Dragnet Show. A very interesting episode. And this is actually, as far as I know, the first episode of Dragnet to really have any type of discussion or role of religion in the case. And this is not the only episode where this happens. There are quite a few episodes where Dragnet will take a case, where there are a few cases where some things happen involving religion. Now, this doesn't appear to have been, as far as I can tell, any type of thing of just slamming religion. But there are also some Dragnet episodes that are very positive towards religion. There's one episode of the 1960s TV show where Joe Friday goes undercover with the department chaplain. In a sting on a numbers racket. And there's also, of course, the Big Little Jesus, where Joe Friday and his partner dedicate a ton of time to tracking down a missing Catholic statue that they believe has been stolen. And we will, around Christmas time, and we will play that episode or two around Christmas time. So there doesn't appear to have been any type of overt malice in any way. And there weren't any protests at the time from what we read. There's no record that I found where anybody was marching in the streets upset about this particular episode. So maybe it's a symbol, perhaps, of the times that have changed. Where before we may have understood, you know, sort of, you know, a story like this one not to be about an attack on religion, but rather on telling the story of somebody who misused, you know, a printing facility that printed religious materials. Because at the end of the episode, Friday sounded pretty, you know, pretty ticked off at the violation of the sacred type thing here. So it's just kind of a reminder of how times have changed, because times are definitely different than in the era of Dragnet. So this show actually is one of the more interesting things, I think, in terms of old-time radio. You really get a feel for how society really was back then. Not in some sort of, you know, some sort of way where we are, you know, where it's just, you know, built up, you know, one way or another, but rather you get the feeling from where it was, what actually outraged them, what bothered people in this era, what made them angry. You know, you can tell that. What were their reactions? How are they different from ours today? Really, Dragnet, I think, more than any other show, connects us to that past. Comedy is timeless, I think. You know, you can listen to the Abbott and Costello show, and it's funny. You'll occasionally get a little dated joke in there from one of the boys, but you listen to comedy podcast, and you know, you totally get it. You know, if it's any good, and you know, if it's not, then you know, it's not been as well preserved. But this actually really gives you a picture into prior generations. So it's almost like a time machine, which is a really interesting feature here, because it takes you back to different time, different culture, so you can kind of grasp what was actually here before you, which I think is one of the great values of the show. All right, got a couple messages. First, another very nice comment on Podcast Alley. This is a great nostalgic program. It reflects the art of radio, which we have largely lost and substituted with less intelligent media program. Thanks for keeping this art form alive, writes RJBMBA. Thank you very much. It's definitely appreciated. And, you know, I'm really appreciative of the work Jack Webb did all these years back to make something that people would still, you know, listen to or want to listen to 60 years after it was made. I mean, that's phenomenal. I mean, you think about it. We are, you know, every week I have from across the internet, somewhere between 12 and 1700 people who are downloading episodes of Dragnet from 1949. It's really a phenomenal thing towards the quality of that art. And that's the big thing with me that I so much enjoy about this show, because it's so well written. There's some, you know, old-time radio that's kind of goofy or corny. This is, you know, really, you know, I'm just blessed to have been able to come upon this and listen to Webb. But thank you so much for your comment. We're definitely going to work to keep this alive and get through this whole series as best we can. If somebody's got one of the lost episodes out there, please send it. Make a great show, or get it to a radio archivist and then have him send it to me, because yeah, this is just really, I think, something I'm just, you know, totally amazed by the response we continue to get to the show. And like I said, it just really shows how well it's lasted, and it does show that maybe we've got a little bit of a, you know, overall things are not as good as some might lead us to believe with our current media, because it doesn't have the same quality of writing, the same, you know, everything. To find a series that's as well written as this is, you know, today, is definitely a challenge. So it's, like I said, definitely honor and a fun thing to be able to do this program. Got another email here. ask a question from reader, from listener Mark. I'm listening to the old Dragnets and really enjoying them. I agree with your assessments of the development of the show, the music, the procedure-driven plots, the role of the captain, and the seriousness of the subject matters perceived by Jack Webb. I know I'm behind, just heard Red Light Bandit, but I wanted you to know that there are people out there who thank you for your contributions. Well, that's definitely appreciated. Listening to this makes me realize that Dragnet was a precursor to Law & Order, Criminal Minds, and heck, every cop show now on TV. I wondered why all the murderers got a death sentence for first-degree murder, even when the acts were not premeditated or even accidental after a beating. When you take a look at the actual murders that occurred on Dragnet that get the death penalty, this is kind of a legal matter of art, but basically, if you're going out there and intentionally committing a crime, you basically have set out to commit a felony. So you've got that criminal intent when you go out and commit that crime, and you're going out there and committing a crime that you premeditated. In the process of that crime that you premeditated, somebody is murdered, then that actually gets bumped up to first-degree murder. Now, in some cases, you know, depending on whether you agree with the definition of a felony, it may not seem fair, but that's the law and that's the general principle. I may have mangled it a little bit, but basically murders that are, you know, done in the commission of the felony, whether they were planned or not, are considered premeditated. So that is the that's the short answer to that one. Imagine some lawyers could write some dissertations on that, but be that as it may, yeah, it does. You don't have to have planned the murder, but if you've planned some felony, then that actually is enough. All right, well, that's it. Thank you so much for listening. Please go and cast your vote over at Podcast Alley. Just put in Dragnet, and we will be the second result to come up. We're currently, as I checked on Friday night, number 172. We'd like more people to be able to listen, and the greater exposure we get on that site, the higher, the more people will be able to listen. So please, if you enjoy the program, please cast your vote. It's definitely appreciated. And as always, you got a feedback for me, email me, adam@adamsweb.us. For now, I do thank everybody so much for listening. This is Adam Graham, signing off.